Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm very excited to be joined tonight by Jake and Eli from Bloomsbury, New Jersey. Welcome, Jake and Eli.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great. It's great to have you on the show here. Now, how old are you two?
We're 9 years old.
Oh, you're 9 years old. Great. And I understand that you're very excited about the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Yep.
Great. So tell me all about that.
Well, I'm sponsoring a kid named Edward, and my name is Elijah. So I'm sponsoring Edward. I decided to raise $250 for him so he could basically not live like a normal person but have a better life.
Great. So you found Edward on the website, and you're going to raise $250 for him?
Yep.
That's great. How are you going to do that?
Well, I'm going to ask my family members and my, well, in school, we asked our friends. We put a bucket out, and we raised about $36 from them, and we're sending letters to our family and close friends.
Oh, great. That's a great way to do it. So you asked your friends at school, and then you're going to send letters to your family, too.
Yep. Lots of family.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Jake, are you doing the same thing?
Yep. I'm sponsoring Paul.
Uh-huh.
And I'm raising between $350 and $400 for Paul. And my plan is to just basically make him have a better life, but to educate him, clothe him, board him, and feed him for about a year.
Oh, great. So you want to support him to have a better life so that he can have enough food to eat and have a safe place to live and a school to go to.
Yep, and help him grow up, too.
Help him grow up, too. That's great. You know, because I'm really excited because somebody did that for me, too, when I was a child.
They did?
Yes, my parents and the rest of the people around me gave me food and they gave me a safe place to live and had a school for me. And it's so exciting because you're helping to do that for those kids in Africa.
Oh, it's like I'm his parent?
Yeah, that's one way to think about it. Yeah, yeah. So how did you find out about the Africa Project?
Well, my mom's a huge fan of Sherry Huber. So she was on a website, and I asked her what she was doing, and she said, I'm on a Sherry Huber website. And then I started searching on the Sherry Huber website with her.
Yes.
And then we saw this column, and it said, I'm not quite sure, I think it said, like, help a kid out or something. I'm not quite sure, I don't remember.
Yes.
We clicked on it, and then we saw all these lists of kids who didn't have, like, parents who were most vulnerable, or their father died, or their mother died, and they didn't really have much of a life. So we figured we could help them out a little bit.
Yeah, that is really so exciting and so wonderful. So you went on the website, you saw the pictures there, and what you realized is that some of them had lost their father or lost their mother or didn't have enough to eat or didn't have a home to live in, and you wanted to help them out.
Yep. And another thing we're doing to raise money, all the money we raise from the yard sale, we're going to donate to Paul and Edward. And the yard sale, the townwide yard sale is actually on June 13th. So it's coming up.
Great. So there's a townwide yard sale on June 13th in Bloomsbury, New Jersey.
Yep. And,
great.
So all the money we make from doing that is going to them. And we were thinking about selling some of our other bigger stuff, but some of it we are, some of it we're not.
Oh, great. Great. You know, we're going to have a yard sale out here in California really soon, about 2 weeks after your yard sale. And I'm wondering if you have any special tips or advice for us in doing our yard sale.
Maybe for a yard sale, you could do this. You could donate half of the money you make to kids, or quarter. You could donate like a quarter of the money you make. You could donate. Basically, anything you donate will help, because there are kids out there that. Because when I went online and I figured out that there were kids that, because I always thought that kids had. I always thought I was like not. I always wanted more, and then I figured out that other kids, I had way too much.
Uh-huh. So you thought that you always wanted more stuff, and then when you went on the website, you realized that there were a lot of kids that didn't even have what you have.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because for Christmas, we got a new TV, we have a Wii, we have all that cool stuff, and I'm always asking for more, but then I realized that I can help some kid have a really good life to them, and we're always like, oh, I don't want to go to school, and some kids in Africa are like, oh, man, why can't we go to school?
Right, right. So there are kids here who don't want to go to school, and then there are kids in Africa who don't even have the option of going to school.
Yep.
Yes. And so you opened your hearts, and you're going to share what you have so that the kids in Africa can have enough food to eat and have a safe place to live and a place to go to school.
Yep, and I think it'll help them out a lot.
I think it's going to help them out a lot, too. And you know, the other thing it's going to help out, well, for certain, it's helping me out because I'm getting really inspired by what you're doing, and everybody else who's listening can be inspired by what you're doing, too. And I think some of those people will start doing what you're doing.
Yep.
Great.
We got disconnected for a second there. Sorry.
No problem. I'm glad you're back. I don't know if you heard what I was saying, but what I said was I think people are going to be very inspired by what you're doing, and I know that for me, I'm going to want to do the same thing too and share what I have with the children in Africa.
I think a lot of kids will be inspired too, and I think they'll do a lot of stuff to help other kids, like maybe donate some money from their birthday, just maybe a few dollars, that'll help a lot. And maybe you could, like if they do the yard sale, they could donate a few dollars from the yard sale. And they could send letters out to friends and family, and they can do a bunch of stuff to help everybody.
Yeah, just the way you're doing.
Yep.
You're talking to your school about it, talking to your family about it. And as you said, if everybody gives a couple dollars, if we all pitch in, we can have a big effect on that.
Yep, a really big effect.
Yes, yes. It's really wonderful.
Another thing we're doing to help them is we're giving all our allowance that we earn each week, which is $3. We're donating that to Paul and Edward.
That's great. That's great. That's very generous of you.
And, because we have, like, we save up a lot of money, so my mom makes us donate money every year. So we decided this year we'd do something a little bit more bigger and, like, do something that was kind of, like, no one else really does that we never heard of and that it would be cool to do.
Yes, I think it's very cool to do. I think it's very fun. You two are very inspiring. Jake
Thank
and
you.
Eli?
And I've raised about $100 so far. My brother's raised about $260 so far, because about 200 of that is his, because he put in a lot of his own money.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
And when we were doing it, because I wanted to more raise money to put in, and my brother kind of just wanted to shove all his money in there.
Yes. Yes. I think however we do it is a great approach.
Yep. Any way I think would be fine.
Yes, I agree. Any way we do it, any way we can help them is really wonderful.
Yep, and I just think it's great to go out there and help a kid.
Yes, me too. That's a great attitude. Jake and Eli, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you for inviting us to your show.
Okay, you're very welcome. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
Bye. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. Was that just about as much fun as possible to have?
Yes, I think
adorable.
It was.
Can we just turn the world over to those two boys and know that we'll be in good hands?
I think that would be a wise decision.
Yeah, that was fabulous. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very busy and grateful for practice in the midst of busyness.
Well, interesting you should say that.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So a couple of things. One, as you know very well, we're on a board retreat this
yes.
week for a Living Compassion Zen Monastery Peace Center board. And we are at Carmel.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so I said that to somebody. I stopped somewhere and the person said, "Well, what are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm on my way to Carmel to our annual board retreat." And there was a couple of seconds delay and then the eyebrows went up and the response, he says, "Oh, wow." And I thought, oh dear, this is starting to sound like a lot of those folks we read about where no matter how bad the economy is, they can still all go on a luxury retreat. So, of course, I hasten to explain that what we do is working meditation here at for the Sisters of Notre Dame, and they generously then let us use their retreat facility for our board retreat. So it works out very, very well for everybody.
Yes.
Yeah, so they get some maintenance done that would be expensive for them to do. We get to be all together in this beautiful place. And so it's a very good arrangement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So since that is the case, so we're all here working together and looking at everything about the organization and where we are and what's coming up and how we're going to do this and that and the other. And so it occurred to me, my agenda items was that I want us to write a book on how. How? So we talk all the time about the difference between content and process. Content is the what of life. How is the process of life. How. How is everything. How is huge. And so that was of interest to me, to get all of these people to talk about how does how work? What is how?
Yeah.
What is how? They had less enthusiasm for it, actually, than I did, because we have all this other stuff that we're doing. And listening to Jake and Eli, that was such a how extravaganza. You know, how do these two young men come up with these things? How do they find that inspiration in themselves? How do they find that willingness? How do they stay with it? How do they, you know, how? So I've talked this lovely group of people into being here in the room with me. Now, I think there might be some people waiting to talk to us on the show.
That's true.
Okay, and so I'm going to invite them, when the time comes, into our conversation about how, and to look at whatever issue is going on with them in terms of how.
Great.
Right?
Great.
So a friend of mine recently said, we were having a conversation actually about how, and he said that as far as he could tell, all problems in the world could be solved through mindfulness, which
yeah.
I think is an interesting look at process.
Yeah.
So all of the problems in the world, lots of content, lots of different stuff. It just seems like there's an endless list of, well, there is an endless list of stuff that is a problem that we need to resolve in some way. And so considering that mindfulness would be the common solution to every human problem, I think is very interesting. So I'm hoping this group of people and whoever is out there in Radio Land, that for the next whatever time, we can have a conversation about what is how? When we look at life, when we look at practice, how do we approach the process of it? Just whatever people would like to contribute to a conversation about how. I will record it all, write it down, write a book, and make a lot of money. That's my plan. I'm in the Eli and Jake Club, though, so I will donate it. Okay,
great.
I'll donate at least a percentage of all of the money that I make.
Yes.
So I'm hoping that somebody in this room, you, somebody who is there on hold, waiting to participate, will have something that they would like to say to get us going in a conversation about how.
Great. Where should we start then?
Well, I'm looking around knowing that one of the people in this room is going to, and here comes Melinda.
Great.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Melinda.
So what I was looking at as Sherry was introducing us to this is that seeing is a huge part of getting from the what's to the how.
Yeah.
So paying attention to sort of how I move through the what's allows me to begin to see the how.
Yes. Yes.
And let's see if I can do a specific. Well, let's see. anger is one that periodically arises for me. And when I have looked really closely at the steps leading to the anger, I was able to see over time that there was first an experience of hurt. And actually before that, there was a little conversation below the radar that spelled out the hurt. And then there was the anger reaction, and then everything that flows from that in whatever way. And so over time, I am able to see that when anger arises, I can begin to identify the hurt and to begin to take care of the part of me who experienced the hurt, who's usually somebody about 6 or 7 years old.
Great. Great.
I think we've got several more people here. We're
going
to move the phone around the room.
Is Sherry there?
Yes.
Sherry, I had an idea.
Okay.
We could alternate people in the room with the callers.
That's great. Perfect. That's a perfect idea.
Recognizing, then we'll all be aware that there are many of us who would like to talk tonight and condense our thoughts likewise.
Yes, yes. So do you have someone there now? Because we have a volunteer in the room.
Great, I have four in the phone queue here, and I know you have at least four, if not more, there.
At least four, yes. Okay.
Okay, good. Let's do one from the phone queue, and then we'll go to the room.
Okay.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Pat from Los Angeles.
Hi.
Hello?
What's going on?
Hi. Well, I was calling because I just found out that the sitting group in my area that I've been attending has been put on hiatus for the summer.
Uh-huh.
And I felt this sort of panic when that happened because I I mean, I've always appreciated the sitting group, and you know, I know how much, how great a you know, kind of support it is for me. But now I really know it, because I'm facing the next few months without it, and I'm sort of feeling disconnected from Sangha. So I thought I would call in. It's the first time I've called in.
Well, now that's just an excellent idea, isn't it? So
yeah.
So what is the one door closes and another one opens? So so there is always Sangha, isn't there?
Right.
Yeah. And then so if we're going to segue this around or slide this around into how, so and that whole paying attention, mindful element. So you were, it sounds like, paying pretty close attention to what was going on with you. Yeah?
Right.
It happened. So you find out that the sitting group is on hiatus. You watch this kind of panic reaction arise. You're aware of an appreciation for the group that you might not have been noticing before it's no longer available. Yeah?
Right.
And then you start looking around for, okay, well then, how will I find support? What might support me if that familiar avenue is no longer available to me?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's very good, isn't it?
It is. It is. You know, it sort of feels like things are just happening kind of perfectly right now, in the sense that, you know, I've been deepening my practice. I've been, you know, I've been involved in the sitting group. I've been listening to the archives. I've been, you know, reading the books, and I'm doing an email class. And the last few months have been really, really expansive for me. And I'm, you know, just seeing kind of a whole new way of living.
Yes.
And then just like in the last week or so, I just got slammed with conditioning.
Sure.
It was.
Right.
It
when
was,
things are going that well, we can almost predict that, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was a huge backlash of just self-hate and just kind of all that old junk that I, you know, hadn't really experienced for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the sitting group goes away, and I had been thinking, you know, about ways to get more involved in the practice anyway. So the sitting group falling apart was kind of like, you know, it happened sort of at the perfect time, I guess, in a way.
Yes, yes. And now there is a real process moment, isn't it? Because that could have been framed as a tragedy. It could have been, the voices could have told you that this is it, this is a signal from beyond, that you have been going in a bad direction, you were wrong about the whole thing, and you should just give up and go back to whatever you were doing before, supporting misery. And and yet, because you were paying attention, because you were present, you didn't let the voices go that in that direction. And you could see that it's really all, it all unfolds perfectly for you to see exactly what you need to see right then in every moment that you're present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and all that stuff that you were just describing about wanting to give up and sort of take it as a sign that, you know, I should just go back to my old ways. I mean, I've absolutely had those thoughts recently,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, I actually caught myself the other day, you know, it was a particularly bad day where conditioning was just screaming at me all day long, and I became so overwhelmed with exhaustion just from listening to these voices, and I had this thought of, God, like, this is just never going to end, is it? And it's just way too hard to fight this, and I might as well just give up.
Yeah.
And I realized when I had that thought that that was conditioning.
Yes, very good. Because you were there. You know, if you had been distracted for a split second while that information came through, we would probably never have heard from you again. But because you were there, you heard it for what it was, you recognized it, and instead of it taking you down, which is what it had in mind for you, you actually popped through it and got to a new place of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm celebrating that.
Yes. And you know, when we just had that little exchange, there were some chuckles around the room with the people who are here, because every one of us knows those voices.
Right.
You know, we all, it's like it's a recording, you know, and it plays in all of our heads at that, you know, it's just exactly as you described, beats you up all day when you're just completely beaten up and exhausted and feeling defeated. Then it comes in for the killer blow of, why didn't you just quit? And of course, sometimes, you know, it comes in with, why didn't you just kill yourself? Which is the, you know, the escalated version of that. And everybody who does awareness practice knows that old song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, yeah, I mean, the thing is that, like, you know, you were talking about the how, you know, the process that kind of gets applied in with every piece of content.
Yes.
And for me, a very familiar process is getting talked into quitting.
Oh, yes. Not just with awareness practice, but with anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exercise,
I mean,
eating well, getting enough sleep, not eating sugar.
Yeah. And I, you know, it always goes the same way of like, this is too hard.
Yeah.
You might as well give up.
Exactly. Yeah. You might as well give up. I'll be your conditioned voice. You might as well just give up, turn your life over to me, and I will devote myself to making you unutterably miserable for the rest of your life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm glad you made this good choice and joined us tonight instead of going off with those voices into their dark lair.
Yeah, I really appreciate Sangha, and one of the big ways that conditioning gets me is by telling me that I'm totally isolated and alone, and that the rest of the world, or that most of the rest of the world, doesn't understand my values and lives by different values, and that I will never be able to function in that in the real world.
Uh huh. Yeah. You know, we like to call it the other world. And, you know, there's a way in which, of course, that's true. It's just that, at least in my experience, the more we practice, the more we see what a fiction that is, that more people are actually trapped by conditioning, feeling isolated, feeling unusual, trying to survive in that world, that projected world. And it's only as we continue to practice and we're around more and more people who tell us the same story that we realize we can't actually trust our perceptions any longer. We look out and we look at these people and it seems like they're operating on a completely different planet than we are. And then we get into a little conversation and start realizing that, wow, we're all exactly alike.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing, and, you know,
all feel isolated.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get some more hows going here.
Okay. Okay.
So take care. Please stay in touch. You're in Southern California?
Yes, LA.
Yeah, that's not that far. You could even come and see us.
My husband and I are coming to the retreat in July, if all goes as planned.
Fabulous. Wonderful.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Well, we'll look forward to it, too, now.
Thank you so much,
Sherry. Thanks. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Sherry, do you have another how over there?
Hi, Michael. This is Penny.
Hi, Penny.
So one of the things that occurred to me, well, first of all, just given what was just said, one way, one how is to come to retreats. That's one big how to stay.
Oh,
stay
yes.
Focused. A how that occurred to me, as Melinda was talking, was that I sometimes find myself suddenly in a just a really unpleasant, unhappy place. And it's always there's always a conversation going. That's how conditioning works. And so one of the things I have found helpful from time to time is to say, how did I get here? What happened? How did I get from where I was to here? And in order to take a look at that, I have to step out of the conversation. I have to step back. And so in investigating how I got there, that's how I get out of the identification that's going on that puts me there. So there's actually a couple of hows going on there. But explicitly asking the question, how did I get here, makes me step back from where I am.
Great.
So are you going to take another caller, Michael?
Let's take a sponsor break, and then we'll take a call, and then we'll take another from Carmel.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Thank you.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, what if you swam in a river of...
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I'll take another caller now.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Seattle.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi, well, I have been looking recently at how I distract myself from feeling authentic feelings.
Uh-huh.
More specifically, and some content, my dad died yesterday.
Aww.
And she's been, you know, pretty much my constant companion for years. And, you know, we going through the whole process of her dying, and I was just watching myself going into distraction. And one of the big ones was anger, but I saw it. I saw where I was going, and I was able, I think because I've been practicing, to stop that and then see it for what it was and see the hurt
uh-huh.
and the pain,
uh-huh.
and then realize that I didn't need, that there wasn't a need to go to the anger. I could just be with the fear of her dying, and then recently, yesterday and today, be with the grief of her being gone.
Uh-huh.
But the pull to go to anger, or the pull to go to blame, or the pull just to be distracted has been so strong.
Yeah.
That I've really, it felt kind of like a fight.
Uh-huh. A fight to stay here instead of going into those old habits and behaviors.
Right, the old pattern of, you know, if I get angry, then it'll fix everything.
Yes. Well, and of course, you know, anger is a great dissipator of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's all of that emotion, and sometimes, sometimes we can recognize these coping behaviors as a kindness to us when we don't have the tools for genuinely taking care of ourselves. So there's somebody, you know, in the past, say before you started doing awareness practice, who would have a lot of emotion about something and really not know what to do with it, not know how to handle it or take care of herself. And so if there's all of this anger, then boom, you know, it's like offloading a bunch of energy all at once. And it is dissipated then, and it can make it a little bit easier to cope.
Well, I had really never thought of it that way. It's actually a very kind way of looking at it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I never thought about it like that, but that could very, I mean, that sounds
That's
like about right.
Yeah. And so now you have tools and abilities, and you can take care of yourself authentically in a genuine kind of way. And so you don't need to do those other kinds of behaviors. But it's kind of like my teacher used to say, now, just because you're in college doesn't mean you have to burn down kindergartens. So, you know, you've got all of these other skills now, which we can be happy for, but we also want to stop and really thank the person who took care of us during times when we didn't have any other way to take care of ourselves.
I like that. I like looking at it like that and then being able to go back and thank that person.
Yes.
Because she hasn't got a lot of thanks.
No.
Over the years.
No, especially angry people are not, angry people are underappreciated, I think.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, gosh, do you feel like saying anything about your little pal? Did she live a long life? Did she?
No, she kind of got cut off midlife.
Aww.
She was middle age, and I was hoping to have a few more years with her.
Yeah.
But she had the problem. The anger thing is a little easy because it was because of an attack by another dog. At least it was due to complications after something happened, and then she had a reaction to medications that she was given because of the attack and an infection, and then the reaction to the medications is actually what eventually killed her. But you know, so.
Well, you know something?
In some sense, that anger is easy to go to, but I'm really happy that I caught myself.
Yeah, anger and blame, very understandable,
yeah.
Huh?
And easy. And explaining it like the dissipation of the energy makes it make sense to me because it feels like, I mean, all this energy, all this stuff is inside of me, and it hurts. It hurts.
Yeah.
A lot just to feel it and to have it there and getting angry just, well, not only lets it go, but it distracts me from it. I don't have to feel it.
Yeah, well, you don't.
And it's been kind of tough to feel it.
Yeah, you don't have to feel all the sadness and helplessness and,
mm-hmm.
yeah, all of those. Just that feeling that this is just wrong.
This is
wrong.
Like this shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But it did, and that's the way it happened, you know.
Yeah.
But and another thing I wanted to ask, because I've just been having a tough time with it, is the sadness feels in some way like suffering, but I don't feel like I'm choosing it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And, you know, Lisa, I personally would go right back to that place that we were just talking about. I think you need to give yourself a little time to work through all of this other stuff. You know, what we want to do is just jump to, you know, some deep place, you know, kind of idealizing how we would be under circumstances like these. But there's mm-hmm. just so much going on. I think just it might take you a little while to get to sort of a pure feeling of loss or grief or sadness
because it is tinged with all these other things. Do you know what I mean by that?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's really true. She was attacked. It's really true that, you know, that she didn't get the medical care that we would have wished for. You know, all of those things are a little, are a piece, a part of the loss. So, you know, if somebody is very old and lies down in bed at night and then doesn't wake up, you know, okay, we can, you know, that we're going to probably have a different response to that than the person who is who has something like this happen in midlife that just is so. There's so many variables that we haven't anticipated. It's so easy for us to think this is a mistake. It shouldn't have gone this way. If this had happened, if that had happened, if only this. Now, none of that's true, of course, but it's so much easier to go to that place under these circumstances. And so I hope you don't, you know, try to take too many shortcuts and let everybody in there have whatever experience they have of losing their friend.
Okay.
Yeah, so you get to kind of be the step back and be the compassionate being for everyone as they come forward and really process this loss. And because you are everything, you're going to have everything. You know, you're going to have, you've got somebody in there who's going to have every reaction possible for a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think I've had quite a few already.
Yeah, so don't hurry, okay? Don't hurry. And above all, don't listen to voices who are experts on this inside your head or out, actually. But especially inside your head, who tell you how you should be feeling and how you should be handling this. And, you know, if you were really the right person, then your reaction would be. And just give yourself all the time and space you need to go through this as you need to go through this.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Thank you.
Not a good time to have standards. Loss.
No, it is.
A tragic loss is not a good time to have standards.
I've been trying to let myself do what feels like it's good for me.
Yep.
What it feels like I need.
I'll tell you what the most helpful thing anybody ever said to me at a time similar to what you're going through. She said, "What you need to do is just expect anything." And the form that it took for me that because you know when she said it to me, I didn't know what. You know, what does that mean? And then I started losing keys. And I mean, I lost so many sets of keys that it finally I would just go have 4, 5, 6 sets made at a time. And then when I lose down to 1 or 2, I'd go back and have more sets made. Okay? Because I just, you know, I was so lost in processing the loss that there just wasn't enough left over to keep track of keys.
Mhm.
Yeah. So to just know it might show up in ways that you can't possibly imagine, but they'll be just fine, perfect ways for you.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you very much, Sherry.
Thank you. Take good care
of yourself.
Thank
you. Okay. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was very touching.
Well, you know, we've been going through so much of that ourselves lately. It just, boy, it's, you know, I don't know if this is true, but it seems so to me that there are just times in life where we kind of hit patterns like this, and they're just, patterns. I mean, I just have talked to so many people over the last little period of time who have lost beloved pets, and then I've talked to so many people who have lost parents, and so it's just
Yeah. We just got to give ourselves lots of understanding, lots of support.
Yes. That's what practice is all about.
It really is. Finding that place of kindness no matter what.
Yes, indeed. Sherry, I think you have more howls in your room there.
I think we do. I think here comes Rebecca with a howl.
Okay, great.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Rebecca.
So, gosh, that was really moving, and it really strikes me around about the how the process of waking up and the how of turning over and over again to compassion, and it is that there seems to be these two templates, if you will, of how conditioning operates and how compassion or loving kindness operates. And whenever I notice that all of the physical signs that I've been trained to notice, the tight stomach or the tight throat or the, you know, bad feeling or all of those things that are our cues when we are noticing in the body, we know that we can know we're stuck in, or I can know I'm stuck in the template of conditioning. And so the how of dropping that and moving to another template or another way of being feels like it models the other compassionate template itself. In other words, it's not a jerking away from the conditioned template to the loving kindness template. It's more of an invitation that in itself is the modeling. So, you know, I said this one other time. For years, when I was sitting on the cushion, I would drop, I would be meditating and my mind would wander, and then it felt like a dog on a leash being jerked back to the moment instead of being invited to come back to the breath. Or, you know, we would say, just drop it and come back to the breath, gently drop it. I must have heard it 100 times, but it wasn't until I just kind of got jerked back enough where I was willing to let that go and turn to another way. Does that make sense?
Yes, indeed. Much more gentle approach.
Yeah. And it feels like, you know, that it's a process of becoming, of living a life that's under new management. You know?
Yes.
And it's not a hostile takeover. It's
yeah.
More of a invitation to for that to come in.
Wow. Yes, that's great. So rather than a hostile takeover, there's much more of an invitation. It sounds much more gentle and kind.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by it models the very process. The process models it itself.
The process models it itself.
Yeah.
Yes. And your commitment to practice makes all of that possible.
Yeah. Commitment and tenacity, and just sometimes I think just pure luck and blessing or something.
Yes, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing, Rebecca. Sherry, we're going to have a sponsor break here, and then we'll be back with the next caller.
All right, thank you.
Porch Dog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porch Dog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to the How Show on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Oh, that was good, Michael.
Thank you. We have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George.
Hey, George.
Hey, Sherry, Michael, and everybody.
Hi.
How?
Hi.
How are you, George?
Well, how is a very, very apropos topic. I would say the how with me has been relentless practice. Conditioning has been absolutely relentless with me over the years, and there was no other choice, really, but to get really relentless myself about practice. And that meant, you know, when I go out for a ride, not forgetting to take my iPod along and plug it in and listen to whatever, you know, whatever open air show comes up, not missing, you know, occasionally, once in a while, missing something, but having, I do, I guess, about 3 hours of practice every day when it, you know, when all of it is added up time-wise. And it's just the best thing in the world to do. And it works. And it has, I think one of the key parts of my practice is just emphasizing over and over again that waking up and ending suffering is more important than anything else.
Yeah.
It's more important than how much money I have. It's more important than what happens with my stocks. It's more important than my health. It's more, you know, right now I'm suffering from sciatica, but I'm not suffering from it.
Right. It's
it.
Interesting how that expression just kind
of
we think in those terms.
Yeah. But as you had said one time, life is as fond of pain as it is of pleasure. And so if we're not separate from life, well, then we're not separate from pain or from pleasure. And so it just becomes kind of interesting, like, my gosh, how painful can this get? I mean, it's just incredibly painful.
Yeah.
And I'm able to... But it's interesting. It's taught me two things. First of all, it's taught me very clearly the difference between pain and suffering.
Yeah.
Because at night and in the morning, I am in such pain that I sometimes break out laughing. It's so ridiculous. I mean, it's just so. But I'm not suffering.
Yeah.
It's the worst pain I think I've ever had in my life. It's worse than a bad toothache. It's just, anybody ever had it is just, you know, everybody shakes their head and says, oh, I know what you're talking about. And I don't know whether it's going to go away, and I don't know whether it's going to get worse or get better or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I tremendous amount of pain, but I am not suffering. And once I get up and I have to, every morning I have to, move very slowly and gradually walk through the pain. Just walk through it. I give myself some Reiki and I do some what exercises I can do without extreme pain. And then I'm actually able, if I'm very careful and this is the other thing, it's made me be in the moment.
Yeah.
Because if I get out of the moment and start moving ahead of myself, which is what we do so much of the time, I'm liable to make a movement and just have this excruciating pain. But if I'm in the moment, I can very carefully and very slowly actually get down into a sitting position, in a cross-legged sitting position, and be comfortable there, which is just amazing. And then if I'm very, very careful, I can get up out of that posture and come back to an erect posture and go on with the day. So this pain has been such a teacher for me. I mean, it's
an inspiration to be mindful.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, the thing that when you first started talking, George, about the relentless, I think so many of us get information that says, if you are the right person, you don't really have to pay attention all the time.
Right.
And, you know, you should be able to just kind of go along with your life and be okay.
Right. Once you graduate, then you're set.
That's right. And What you're pointing out is that while conditioning is attempting to talk us into that life view, it is relentless in its pursuit of our suffering.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That the only way that we can be in response to that is as relentless in our attention, our efforts to be present, our staying with the breath, you know, all of the get here, stay here, be here kinds of things that we know how to do. And,
yeah.
Of course, always I like to point out the good news about that is that we use a word like relentless, but it's really the most pleasurable way for a human being to live is in that constant attention to that which animates us in this very moment that we are being animated.
Yes, yes. And the other practice that goes along with that is unconditional acceptance.
Yes.
For me, that's, of course, unconditional self-acceptance, unconditional acceptance of all the different parts of myself, unconditional acceptance of my ego, which is constantly trying to make hay out of, you know, whatever quote-unquote successes, unquote, I may have with my practices. Make it mean something about me being, you know, and therefore being separate from life and maybe better than other people when I'm not as good as other people, all that competition, all that stuff. So there's just always, it's just a constant need to be aware, to be awake, to be conscious, and to be relentless in that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good word. Practicing relentlessly. I like it.
Yeah, there's nothing better.
Yeah.
And the unconditional acceptance I've noticed is when you're able to do it, when I'm able to do it with myself, I just automatically do it with everything else.
Yes.
It's universal. It's non-dual. It's not separate. You know,
yeah.
Unconditional acceptance is unconditional acceptance, whether it's me, whether it's my partner, whether it's whatever it is. And it's amazing how much I notice these old habits coming up of wanting to be right and wanting, you know, to show that my partner is wrong and wanting to, you know, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
But
George, have you noticed that you can't just say, she's wrong. Once and for all, get it settled and go on. With conditioning, it has to be a moment-by-moment conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, of course. However, it is a valid point. You know, if we could just say, I'm right, she's wrong, then there could be peace about it.
Yeah.
You know, I could even let her do whatever because I know she's wrong, and so I don't really need to be affected by it. But instead, we have to go through it one more time, one more time, one more time.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Play it over and over again the same
yeah,
way.
Yeah, makes you think it's not actually about right and wrong, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if it were about right and wrong, then we could just have that discussion once, and that'd be the end of it. But the fact that we have to do it over and over makes me think there's another how going on. There's another process in that we're not meant to actually focus on. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Good to hear from you. Take good care of yourself. I know I can trust you to do that.
I will endeavor to do that.
All right.
And thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I think it's time for a Carmel How.
Yes.
Hi, Michael. This is Mickey.
Hi, Mickey.
I was, when Rebecca talked about the two templates, I was reminded that just recently this kind of little mantra just dropped in on me, which is karma or kindness.
Oh, wow.
And it's been really helpful in moments when I can feel that real familiar feeling of I'm about to go deeper into conditioning, and that little thing comes up and I go, you know, really, which would I rather have? Would I rather choose the old familiar path, which is not very pleasant, or would I rather just be kind to myself and drop it?
Wow.
And an example of that happened just before we came up here. I was my working meditation assignment was in the kitchen, and it's a really good place to be. It's a lot like looking at the white wall, because I was given some tasks that were, you know, it wasn't rocket science, you know, to peel and chop an orange. And so there's a lot of ability to be present, because I don't have to be doing anything very complicated. And there were a couple times in my tasks where I received some guidance from the cook about things that I could do a little bit differently to make things come out better. And I felt right away the karmic reaction come up to justify myself that I know how to cook and that I'm doing the right thing. And then I just, that mantra came in and I said, it's not worth it. You know, that's not what we're here about. Just go back and do what the suggestion was. And it's so much kinder. It's so much, I don't know, what would I say? It's so much more to the point of life than to go into that familiar story of, well, yeah, but, you know, I do know what I'm doing, and so what? You know, so it seems to me that so much of my familiar how is about how I'm me, how I'm that me that I recognize and is my identity, and it's not a very peaceful place.
Yes, yes. And what I hear in you and in the other sharings also is really a moment-by-moment attentiveness that really makes it possible for you to see the choice and make the choice that you know will result in what you want.
Right, right, yeah. The moment-by-moment is crucial, because you get too far down that road into the old story and it's a lot harder to find your way out of it.
Yes, yes, indeed. Wonderful.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Mickey. Sherry, we have about 6 minutes, and we have one more caller here.
Good, and then we have Dave in the on deck, so we're all set.
We're all set. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Todd.
Todd?
Hi,
how
Sherry.
Are you?
I'm okay. Barely.
Barely.
I'm scraping up the pot of self-hate, get to the top, and I'm slipping back down. And then back up, and then back down.
Oh.
And quite interesting, yeah, since Deepening Practice Retreat, which was just, I've got to give such a shout-out to the monastery and the monks and the practice. What a great, great experience. I had such a great 30-day experience.
And then they were waiting for you, where, at the airport when you got off?
No, I got a week off, actually, a week in the heart.
Wow.
And then the backlash is, like you say, and there's nothing wrong with you, here on to ever experienced. It took it to another level. I haven't experienced in this awareness practice. Yeah.
So
that's a great thing.
How are you dealing with it?
Well, I'm using my reflective listening buddies, you know, and I'm using the support calls of that, and I'm using my sitting practice, and I'm using the Making Peace with Money email class, and I'm using my LBK poster with all the reminders and my reassurances and the patience of my wife and son, who don't know what has happened to their dad and husband.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like, see if this is it. You realize that you're in the middle of a storm.
Yes, I call it an ego storm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you could panic and get hysterical. You could flail around. You could despair. You could do all sorts of things. But the reality is, it's going to pass.
Yes.
And so, what you can do while it's working its way through is practice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been...
It is. It's kind of like food poisoning.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, good analogy.
Food poisoning. And, you know, no matter how much you want to say, ooh, you know, this is wrong. This shouldn't be happening. I don't like this. I don't want this. This is,
yeah.
You know, it's in there, and it's going to pass through.
Yeah, and it has. You know, it's kind of ebbed and flowed and ebbed and flowed.
Uh-huh.
And it has, you know, it's sort of like being in the hurricane. You're in the eye of the storm, and it all calms down, and it settles down. You're like, ooh.
Ooh, thank God.
I got through. Yeah, I got through that part of it. And then the second wall hits you
yeah.
and goes, whoa, okay. Batten down the hatches. Here we go.
Yeah, and it's kind of good, isn't it? Because to me, one of the really difficult places in practice is when we get lulled into, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because then when you get knocked flat, you really get knocked flat. But if you're kind of used to it, so, okay, now we're down in the trough, and then we're going to be up here, and then we're going to hit that trough again. And I don't know why, it's just easier than cruising along and suddenly running into a wall.
Yeah, it's so true. And it was so pointed out a lot during the Deepening's practice retreat that when you get back to, we'll call it in quotes, regular life, be prepared, be prepared. And I was prepared.
Uh-huh.
And when it arrived, I went, uh-huh. Sort of like, you know, Rumi says, the unwelcome house guest, you know, just kind of put out that welcome mat and,
uh-huh.
You know, make the beds and cook the meals and just...
Todd, that is such a fun idea.
Yeah.
To just approach this as a house guest. You know, make a little place for self-hate and conditioning to sleep. You know, start setting an extra place at the table.
Yeah.
Make a spot when we're going to watch a DVD or whatever, you know, make a special place. And just welcome it into the family.
Yeah.
And see what happens. That could be really fun. It reminds me of, you know, having a depression party.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I had to reread that book because it's been knocking me down with depression. That's one of my big karmas. So I had to reread the depression book. And I had a little depression party in a sense of that word of doing that. And all the tools. Without the tools and without the awareness, I'll tell you, I don't know where I'd be.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. It would not be pretty, would it?
No, it wouldn't. And, you know, the gratitude does come up. And I listened to the guided imageries have really been helping me from the LBK class, the one with the blanket of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become unacceptable, the ego, but I just invite in self-hate and I invite in ego-centered karma conditioning into my blanket of acceptance, and that's been very helpful.
Uh-huh.
Just like, you know, welcoming the house guests.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And there, you know, it's kept me away from the radio show. You know, conditioning's kind of talked me out the last few weeks. But tonight I just pushed through the pain and pushed through the resistance and said, oh, I'm going to sit down and call and listen. And
yeah, and
every time you do. Sorry,
you know,
go ahead.
One of the things that might be an encouragement in those times is it doesn't – let's see, how can I say this without making it sound like a guilt trip? But it's not always – I don't always do it. Because I feel like it. I do it because it supports me and it supports the rest of Sangha and practice.
Right.
So you can remind yourself of that. You know, yeah, I don't feel like it. And, you know, it might just be what somebody else is experiencing who doesn't have the wherewithal to call in.
You're right.
So I will do for the love of others what, if I listen to conditioning, I wouldn't be able to do for myself.
That is a very wonderful encouragement, and I see we're almost out of time. But in another great solace I take is in "There's Nothing Wrong with You" book, Sherry. When you say, when conditioning really gets riled, it really gets riled, then you know you're really heading in the right direction, and it's time to pick up the pace.
Yeah.
And that gives me such comfort because I go, wow, I have to be doing something here, or this thing I would be in constant comfort.
Yeah.
And I'm not. I'm in constant distress and constant conditioning and karma and the whole thing, the voices and everything, but I'm like, wow,
I'm shaking these people up.
I'm shaking this conditioning up, and I'm here to end suffering, and by golly, I'm going to keep at it.
Yeah, yeah, well.
Keep at it.
Well, we're sending you lots of energy from right here in this room, so everybody, you know, Michael's always so good at remembering to acknowledge everyone who calls in and say what a contribution and how courageous it is for
thank
people
you.
To call in and support one another in this way.
Thank
so
you.
We're sending the energy back out.
All right. And
all right.
Thank you
thank
for
you,
all the support of Sangha.
Yeah, exactly.
So important. And but it goes both ways.
Yes, good.
I feel it too.
Yeah, good, good.
Great. All right. Will you take good care of yourselves there? I guess you're at the retreat?
Yes.
You're on retreat?
Yes. Yes. We're on retreat.
Yeah, I love being on retreat. I wish I were there with you, but I'm there in spirit.
All right, good, good.
All right.
You, Todd.
Take care. Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Maybe we'll get Dave McKay to start off our show next week, huh?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. This has been a very fun show, Sherry. I really enjoyed it.
Too. I've really enjoyed it my own self. And these guys look like they're that fun. So,
right.
Yeah, it's good.
And so I'd like to appreciate all of you in Carmel and all of our callers and all of our listeners and you, Sherry. Thank you so much.
We'll do it again.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.